Our guest speaker, Maximilian Sanchez Arbeláez, has been serving as the charge d'affaires of the Embassy of the Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela to the United States since last July. He was appointed ambassador to the United States in February of 2014. He has not taken that position due to some dispute with the U.S. government. He served as commissioner in international relations from 2013 to 2014 for President Maduro. He was the ambassador of Brazil from 2010 to 2013, where he received a Medal of the Order of Rio Branco for distinguished diplomatic service. He was a minister counselor for the Venezuelan mission to the United Nations from 2006 to 2007. Ambassador Sanchez is a lawyer with a master's degree in Latin American political science from the University Pantheon in Paris, and did his postgraduate study in political science at the University in London. He joined President Hugo Chavez's government as a consultant in foreign affairs, and then served as a senior advisor to the Office of the Presidency for two periods, 2004-2006 and 2007-2010. Contributed to several international magazines, including Le Monde Diplomatique and Folha de Sao Paulo, among others, where his writing on politics in Latin America is regularly published. In other words, our speaker tonight is well-versed, experienced, and has the authority of an active participant and leader in the Venezuelan government. Please join me in welcoming Ambassador Maximilian Sanchez Arbeláez.
Thank you very much. So, I don't have your voice, you know? That's going to be a problem.
I don't either. Here's the microphone.
Yeah, actually, I was quite impressed. I was saying, my God, now I'm going to speak. How, you know, it's not easy. No microphone. I hope you can hear me. Yes, is it okay? Let's see. I will try my best. But again, I was quite impressed. You know, I said to myself, yeah, I should learn more from Professor Technique, you know. So thank you very much to be here tonight. This is my first time in Chicago, I have to say. And it's funny because they told me it's windy and it's raining, and it is true. It's true. So, you know, when you, Professor, when you responded the second question, I was reading my little notes, and I said to myself, my God, but you are saying everything I was going to say. I'm going to start to talk about myself a little bit. For nearly 10 years, almost 10 years, I've been very lucky and privileged to work closely to President Chavez. And then in 2010, I was appointed as ambassador in Brazil. I worked there for 3 years. But I mentioned that because, yes, I was privileged to be a witness and to follow all the changes that have been taking place in Latin America for the last 10 years or 15 years, since 1999. All this process, all the changes for the better that took place in our continent. So I was in Brazil for 3 years, and then President Chavez passed away in 2013, and I went back to Caracas to work with President Maduro. And then last year, I still remember, I was having a conversation with my president, and we were talking about the United States and how important, you know, that we start to improve the relations and find the right balance in our conversation with the United States. And we're thinking, okay, we should do something about it. And then a couple of days later, I received a phone call from my president. He told me, oh, Maximilian, I've been thinking, I think you should go there. So I said, okay. So usually, our diplomats, when we go to the United States, they don't stay very long, you know. So I said, okay, it's going to be a challenge. So I arrived here in July last year, and I can tell you that being not an easy job for the last 8-9 months. But then one day I woke up and I read in the news that my country, Venezuela, has become a national threat to the United States. It is something, you know. Wow. Then I start to look at the list of the countries that being as well designed, shown as national threat to the United States, and I think there's 9 or 10 countries, I think. And usually it doesn't end very well for those countries. So I was thinking, wow, I represent a national threat to the United States. And I always thought to myself, but no, Venezuela is hope. We are trying to build something different, you know. But then, yes, I have to say that a couple of days before the summit of Panama, you know, that was in April. Have you been following what took place in Panama? That it was the first real summit of the Americas, of America, because we were all invited, including Cuba for the first time. It was a big event. And also, it was very interesting to see that almost all the presidents that took part of the summit, they all said to President Obama, come on, Venezuela can't be a threat to the United States. I have to say that a couple of days before the summit, actually, President Obama did recognize that Venezuela was not a threat. We need to take into account that. But then, obviously, nobody paid very much attention to that summit. That was, I think it took place on a Friday and a Saturday, the 10th and the 11th of April. And that Sunday is when Hillary Clinton tweeted that she was going to be candidate. And also it was on the same day that Game of Thrones launched the 5th season. So that wasn't on the news, you know. Nobody paid attention to that one day before, you have all the countries of the hemisphere in Panama talking about the future of the continent. And also, yes, that for the first time you are in the same room, a president of Cuba and the president of the United States, you know, quite a big thing. And also, yes, that nobody could understand how come this, we can say that Venezuela is a threat. And so we've been discussing, and I've been discussing to my government, to the president, how we have become a threat, you know, and all these things. But yes, no, I believe Venezuela is a... we are continuing... Ah, there's a microphone coming.
Test.
With the Manchester United. Is it okay? It works?
Yeah, how is this?
Hello. Okay, I'm gonna... It's okay, I can... I'm not supposed to move very much because there are two cameras. It's not working. Wow. I look ridiculous now.
Turn it on.
Where?
Yeah.
Okay, we carry on. So, few headlines that you might never heard about Venezuela, or you might never read about Venezuela in the mainstream media, even in my country. As the Professor Lee said, illiteracy was eradicated in Venezuela. Extreme poverty was cut in half to 5%, while poverty fell to 25%. 95% of Venezuelan people today eat 3 times per day. There was a picture on that presentation you have there from the La FAO, the World Food Organization, giving to President Maduro an award about that. Today, Venezuela, here we are in a university. Today, Venezuela has the second highest college enrollment in the region. Housing increased by 40%. The number of senior citizens receiving pensions more than tripled. Social investment increased to about a 2/3 of government spending. But yes, we do believe that we are a threat. We have in 15 years more than 19 elections. Every year there's an election in Venezuela. And we're going to have a new election before the end of this year, parliament elections. Last year we have local elections, yeah. Then the year before we have presidential elections, governor elections, again presidential elections because when President Chavez was elected. I mean, you know, every year. It is a problem sometimes to govern, you know, because every year we get elections, you need to mobilize, to work. But yeah, we never talk about that, about all these things in Venezuela. When I arrived here in the United States, I've been doing some research. How can I explain to my friends here about what's going on in Venezuela? And I think to some extent, it's a combination with the New Deal, you know, President Roosevelt in the 30s, last century, economic and social inclusion is what we've been trying to do in Venezuela. And also, to some extent, the civil rights movement in the 60s, also from last century, political inclusion. So I believe that what took place in Venezuela, what is taking place in Venezuela for the last 10 years, is a combination of these two historical movements that you went through here in this amazing country. Civil rights movement. For the first time in Venezuela, you have the vast majority of our people that before they were regarded as second-rank citizens, that suddenly now they have become full citizens with rights, but also duties and obligations. And nowadays, if you have the opportunity to go to Venezuela, you will find an amazing society where all the sectors of the population, higher, middle, lower classes, working classes, everybody is engaged, committed, talking about politics. You know, when you think that in our last local elections, the turnaround was around 80% to elect a mayor, you know. 80% people get mobilized. And I'm saying that because in Venezuela, it is not compulsory to go to vote. So yeah, so that's quite important. And political and social inclusion, and economic and social inclusion, and I refer to the New Deal, because, well, what I said just before, all this amazing social progress that we've been through. And again, because political willingness. So that's quite important. And so we've been deepening democracy with the participation of the people. We've been democratizing the communication. We always talk here about the lack of freedom of speech, the lack of freedom of expression in Venezuela. And on the contrary, so I know you... But you think I've got already two microphones. You're going to put the third one, you know? It's like, wow. Even in CNN, they don't do that, man.
This is better than CNN.
Yeah? Yeah, I believe, but I mean... So here, is okay?
Oh, yeah, perfect.
It's to balance my body because, yeah. You know, look. I'm not nervous. Okay, so now, what does it change?
You might want to put it closer up here okay. On your lapel, maybe.
Hello, and then?
Can you?
I mean, I can carry it if you want.
Yeah, I mean,
hello?
If that works.
Okay. But that
is it on? I don't think it's on.
Is on?
Yeah, no, it is on. There is feedback.
I mean, it's okay, no? We've been struggling until now. We can carry on, no? Okay, sorry, my friend. It's okay.
Sorry.
It's okay. Don't worry. John, it's okay. No pasa nada.
One moment.
No, it's okay. Don't worry.
Sorry about that.
It's okay. I mean, you know. So I was talking about deepening democracy. You know, in Venezuela, for the first time, we've been discussing and voting our constitution that took place in 2000. For nearly 6 months, everybody, you could go everywhere in Caracas, in all the country, people were discussing our new constitution. And then we went to a referendum that was in December 2000. And for the first time, we've been able to vote for our constitution. That was an important moment. And in our constitution, we talk about democracia participativa, participatory democracy. And the idea that in order to take decision, we need to have the participation of all the citizens. Another very important, as I mentioned before, the democratization of communication. Again, if, you know, there are two Venezuela, one virtual particularly in the internet and in the mainstream media, and the real Venezuela when you go there. And that's quite that's quite amazing, you know, that these two different Venezuela. And yes, for the first time you got some of sectors of the Venezuelan population that they get access to the media that not only, they don't talk only about one sector of the population, but they talk about all the Venezuelan society. Another point, regaining sovereignty. You know, thanks to the Bolivarian Revolution, we've been able to rediscover our nation. Where do we come from? Franz Chavez was a wonderful teacher, a wonderful pedagogue. He was an historian. And what always amazed me from him that he was able to look the past and our history in order to move forward. That was very important. And I think this idea to rediscover the nation is what's been characterized most of the process that's been taking place in Latin America in the last 10 years. Not only in Venezuela, but in Ecuador, in Bolivia, to some extent in Brazil, in Argentina. You know, people start to be proud of our history and where we come from. That's something that I believe Franz Chavez was one of the first to show us that. And because I mentioned this idea of Bolivar, obviously another very important concept that we've been fighting for and promoting is the idea of regional integration and solidarity. When you imagine how was Venezuela and Latin America 15 years ago, 20 years ago, and where we are now, we got UNASUR, CELAC, MERCOSUR, you know, ALBA, Petrocaribe. And I have to say that most of these important new forum or regional bodies, Venezuela was one of the key players on their creation, on their promotion. So that's something quite new. And I believe that's one of the reasons why, for example, when President Obama goes to Panama, well, you have to listen to all these presidents showing solidarity to Venezuela and seeing this continent has changed, you know? Obviously, we are all very pleased about what's taking place right now between the United States and Cuba, you know? It's very important. But we believe that also that's a result of all the changes that have been taking place in our continent in the last 10, 15 years. So, as I've been saying, that we've been through an important social transformation and political as well in Venezuela. And what is important that there's elections, as I said, every year. But a bit like during the civil rights movement here, you know, you have some sectors of the society, of the population, that for them is very difficult to accept this kind of change and to realize that, yes, you've got also the vast majority of the people that want to be part of the society. And sometimes you got a kind of violent reaction with that. So, you know, in 2002, you had a coup against my government, against Prince Chavez, that did last only for 2 days. That was in April 2002. And thanks to an amazing mobilization from the army and from the people, Prince Chavez was back. And from time to time, you got some people that, you know, they cannot accept the result of the polls, the result of the elections, and they try something, you know. So, for example, last year, we went through a very difficult moment. I believe some people thought that when Prince Chavez died, that was going to be the end of the Bolivarian Revolution. You know, a strong leader, very charismatic, die. How can we carry on, you know? It's impossible. So we have to remember that couple of months after his death, we have a presidential elections. President Maduro was elected. It was a difficult election because we were all, recovering from the death of Juan Chavez. It was a difficult moment for the Venezuelans, for my country. And when you go to election, usually you go, with a kind of fighting spirit, and kind of, but, we were, recovering, in luto. And then, so the result was, again, Maduro was elected with, 51% of the vote against 49. The kind of result you will find in any European country, for example, but because it is Venezuela, so, oh my God, something fishy took place there, But okay. Then 6 months later, in December 2013, we have the election for mayors, local elections. It is very interesting because at that moment, the Venezuelan opposition decided to transform that local election as a kind of national referendum. This time we're going to show to the people, to the world, that yes, we have the majority. So the election took place in December, and again, huge participation, more than 80%, and the result was 55% of the votes for the PSUV, the party of the Bolivarian Revolution, and 45% for the opposition. And now I don't have the numbers of towns and cities that, but a large majority went through the party of President Maduro. So again, an important result. And yes. Okay, result of the election. That's democracy. A few days later, the result, we have an important meeting that took place in Caracas with President Maduro, where he invited all the new elected mayor, including from the opposition. I was at that meeting, actually. A very interesting meeting where President Maduro said, okay, we got our differences, but let's try to move on and identify areas where we can work together. Because, we've got some problems, that's true. And we need to work all together to resolve them. So that was in December 2013. And then a few weeks later, suddenly, you have a little tiny group of people from the opposition that decided to go to the street of Caracas. And we decided to stay there until my government resigned. This event took place mainly in the upper classes, middle classes, of Caracas and other places of Venezuela. They were described by the mainstream media as a student protest. It was very interesting because I was in Caracas at that moment, and obviously everybody was talking about Kiev in Ukraine and all these events that had been taking place before in Egypt, and so as soon as you got a group of people gathering in a square, they think, oh, a revolution is taking place there and the government must be very bad. But yes, but that was not exactly the case in Venezuela, because these demonstrations were not exactly led by peaceful students. And it was very easy to see that something else was going on at that moment. And yes, a coup was on its way in Venezuela during these days. An attempt to destabilize a government, an attempt to show to the world, look at this government that is repressing all these peaceful students. The point that there was really an attempt to overthrow a legitimate and democratic government. How come? Well, when you think they targeted only public offices, they started to interrupt the validity of the street of Caracas, and in quite a violent manner. And unfortunately, 43 Venezuelan citizens died during these weeks, including 10 members of the armed forces or security officers. But you see, again, it was, they call that moment la salida, no? The way out. We will stay until the government resigned. And I think that if something like that might take place in any country in the world, including here, obviously the state will react and make sure that the citizen can have a normal life and not to be interrupted and disrupted by a minority of people. And that's what we did. And these 43 people who died, some of them including, they have nothing to do with the demonstrations or whatever. And we all feel very sorry for them. Very sad moment. And yes, you have a few leaders, political leaders, that were involved in that coup. And now we have to respond to the Venezuelan justice. Right now, as I'm speaking, you got a couple of women that were in Washington, D.C., and they just received an award from the NED, a kind of prize to fight for democracy and for... And one of these ladies, her husband, was one of the main leaders of this coup last year. I prefer President Maduro to receive an award from the World Food Organization than from the NED. I should mention that more than 3,000 people were arrested during these riots or whatever we call that, during this coup. And right now, only 39 people are still in jail. And from these 39 people, half of them, they belong to the police or to the armed forces or to the National Guard. Half of them. And there's only one person that we could say is a student. Yes. But again, you will never see that in the New York Times or... So, it's interesting. You know, so they present my country as a national threat, that we don't respect human rights. When you look at our history and where do we come from, you have to remember, for example, in Venezuela, in the 70s, in the 80s, in the 90s, all the violations of human rights that took place. In 1989, you have what we call the Caracaso, February 89. I believe that more than 5,000 people were killed, and most of them by the armed forces. And you didn't have any sanction built against Venezuela at that moment. You didn't have any executive order against Venezuela at that moment, you know? But yes. So, where we are now. Obviously, we are going through some difficult moment. Venezuela is an oil producer country. Nobody could have imagined 6 months ago, 8 months ago, that the price of the barrel of the oil will drop from $100 to $40. That's something, you know. Not a good moment to be a president or to govern a country that, you know, needs its main income. Because that's the truth, you know, Venezuela is an oil producer. There's nothing we can do about it, you know. So yes, so a difficult moment, but he obliged us to diversify our economy and to be more, let's say, creative. But again, what is it very important? That this year we're going to have a parliament election, and again, is where I believe the vast majority of the Venezuelan people wants our differences to be resolved through elections, not through violence, through, you know, that's very important. This coming Sunday, on the 17th of May, our opposition, we're going to have a, how do you say, primaries. And we are very pleased about that because they ask our electoral body to organize them. So again, when you read the press and you see the mainstream media, they always say that in Venezuela, you know, we cannot trust the electoral body, the court, the justice. And but yeah, it was, you see, it seems that the Venezuelan opposition, sometimes they for them, our electoral body is good only when we win elections, you know, not when we lose. I mean, but it's a good example for democracy, the fact that, you know, primaries will take place, and those who identify themselves with the Venezuelan opposition they're going to be able to elect their candidate for the next elections. And the PSUV, the party of the revolution, I think they're going to have their primaries in June, July. And again, yeah, we will have elections for the end of the year. And we are taking some important measures because we are confronting some difficult moment on the economic front, as I said before, $100, $40, you know. and also, one thing I didn't mention, that yes, we went through also a kind of sabotage of our economy. For those who know history, remember what took place in Chile in the early 70s before the coup, you know, to create havoc, chaos, shortages, you know, with this idea that you can identify a socialist country because there's a lot of queue there. Well, it's not exactly that. And definitely you got sectors of the economic, of the sectors that been working against my government, promoting all these shortages and all this disarray. But we are fighting that. And things are improving. And we believe that in the next few months, we've managed to stabilize the situation. I should mention that Venezuela also has been an important player, as I said, to promote solidarity and integration in all the region. We mentioned Petrocaribe, for example, very important for all our brothers from Haiti and Dominican Republic, Jamaica, you know, and also for Central America. El Salvador judged on Petrocaribe last year. Very important. As you know, some important peace talks are taking place in Colombia right now. And again, Venezuela is very, you know, we are following closely what's taking place there. If everything goes well, we might have a continent free of any armed conflict. Very important. And for those who think that promoting the stability in Venezuela, you will have something better, just imagine all the changes that have been taking place in my country if we don't resolve our differences through election, through democratic manners. It will be a chaos. It will be very dangerous, not only for Venezuela, but for most of the region. So, yeah, interesting times. I'm very pleased to see that you're interested in what's taking place in my country. I believe now we can have a kind of Q&A moment. But before that, I would like to thank you, Professor Lee, Felix as well, Professor Felix, Stanfield Smith, our consul, Jesus, that's been helping me to promote this event. And let's hope next time when I come back, we will have a microphone, because I'm losing my voice right now. Don't be surprised about my French accent, because I grew up in France, so it's where I get this silly accent when I was a teenager. And any question, whatever you want to know about my country, I'm here to respond to you.
For a decent while, yes, sir.
Can you translate to the ambassador? I want to thank him for coming here to teach us about Luther. Thank you very much.
As Luther? let's take a few questions.
Guyana, I'm going to start with Guyana because I believe there was some election taking place.
Just right now.
Okay, again. So elections took place in Guyana a couple of days ago, I think. And actually, I don't know. I feel very embarrassed. I don't know the result.
They don't know either.
Okay. okay, but whatever the result is, you know, the point that in the previously, there was all being an attempt to promote a kind of confrontation between Venezuela and Guyana. It's interesting because everything started when Guyana got its independence. And just a couple of years before the independence, which year was it? In the independence of Guyana?
70s.
In the 70s. I thought it was in the 60s. But just before, a couple of years before, we have this decision in a court, I think in the UK. I mean, this controversy about between Venezuela and Guyana. And at that time, it was really this idea to confront this young nation, Guyana, to Venezuela as a kind of, I mean, they were regarding us as the imperialist ones, you know. It was interesting that with Prince Chavez, yes, there's this controversy, and that's been dealt at the UN. I think there's, I don't know the name exactly, but there is an appointed person by the General Secretary who follow this controversy. But we've been trying to promote a real integration with Guyana. And our relation with the last government and the previous ones and have been excellent. And Guyana is part of UNASUR and part of all these regional integrations. And we support that. And there's no way that people could say, do you know who always promote this idea that Venezuela is against Guyana? The right wing Venezuela, the opposition. It's quite interesting, actually. But and I'm sure that whatever the result is, we will carry on this process of integration. And yes, that controversy, that matter, will be discussed where it should be discussed, but not in a confrontational manner or whatever. You know, so, yeah. The question about nationalization of food.
Distribution,
yes. It's difficult to nationalize food. You know, Venezuela used to import 80% of what we consume. Again, that's part of the price to pay when you are oil producer. At the end of the day, it's always cheaper to import than to produce. Venezuela in the late 19th century was producing cocoa and coffee, and then a couple of decades later, and even tobacco, they discovered oil that was in the 1914 or 19, and we became a huge field of oil producer with derricks. And you know, Venezuela become one of the most important oil producers in the world, founding member of OPEC in the 60s. And as I mentioned to you, it became very cheap to import and not to produce. And the consequences in Venezuela were terrible because we didn't have any more the culture, in agriculture, peasant, mineral. We don't produce anything. And you have all this migration from the land to the cities, you know. So we got another problem in Venezuela, that things are cheaper than most of our neighbors. So you have to understand that most of the product that you get in Venezuela, you will pay sometimes 30, 40, 50% less than in Colombia or in Brazil. So an attractive job to do in Venezuela is to be a smuggler, you know, and to buy food in Venezuela and you take it to your neighbors. Okay? And recently we have discovered that 30% of what we import in Venezuela end up in Colombia. Because whatever we do, it's cheaper. It will still be cheaper in Colombia to get something from Venezuela than. So that's a real problem. So when President Maduro is talking about nationalization, he's trying to find the best way to guarantee that the vast majority of the people can get access to food. Because that's the other thing, that yes, we've got some problems, but on the other hand, as I said to you before, according to the World Food Organization from the UN, Venezuela now, we don't have any more hunger. Okay, that's very important to understand. So right now, President Maduro, that's the main battle we are having in Venezuela, is to guarantee to the people access to the food. And we are talking about, when you say nationalization, we are talking about to establish a network to facilitate the distribution. But again, we are not against the private sector. That's something very important to understand. It's not that we don't want any more the private sector to produce or to, you know, the private sector has its part in our economy. And it's going to be like that. But yes, we want to make sure that the state can guarantee to the vulnerable people access to their needs. And that's the reason we're talking about establishing a network of distribution. More question? There was a first one, but... the NED. But you know, that kind of question, I don't know what to answer, because I think we need to wait 50 years to see... Yes, from the, you know, when they open the files.
Unclassified.
Or maybe less than 50 years, actually, yes. But, so I don't know right now how much through the NED, USAID, the Venezuelan position has been receiving. But I'm sure you can find the answer.
Three great questions for somebody that does diplomacy. U.S. Venezuelan relations, Puerto Rico, Venezuela, Cuba, Venezuela. So
yes, and I have
30
to
seconds or less.
Okay, thank you.
No, I'm kidding all the time.
So you read that in the Latin American Tribune? Yeah. Well, I'm still a chargé. I'm not yet an ambassador. So, but yes, we're having discussion. This is not a secret. As you know, a few days before the summit in Panama, that's public, a special envoy from Secretary Kerry came to Caracas. And then during the summit in Panama, there was an informal meeting or conversation between President Obama and President Maduro for 15 minutes. I mean, again, that was public. I mean, that's been not public, the meeting, but we've been reported. And we are talking. We you know, something very important. It's true that a few days before the summit, President Obama did recognize that he doesn't regard Venezuela as a threat. That was quite important to say, you know, and at least to admit. So, you know, we are talking, and hopefully in the next few weeks, we might have some things to show and to say to the world. But yes, it might be a contradiction to, in one way, we all celebrate the end of this last chapter of the Cold War, when President Obama and President Raul Castro, they did announce on the 17th of December the normalization of the relation, and we all celebrate that. I think it's very important to put an end to this situation that lasted for nearly 60 years. But then it would be a bit strange, a bit weird, a bit sad, to say the least, that then suddenly you open another chapter not quite nice with my country, you know? So that's the reason it's very important for all of you and for all of us to keep an eye on that and be on alert. But as President Maduro said, we support that process of normalization between the U.S. and Cuba. And we recognize the courage and of President Obama to have done that. And apparently next week we're going to start again to talk, and very soon we might have ambassadors, a Cuban ambassador in Washington and a U.S. ambassador in La Habana. I hope that I can be their colleagues. the Cuban. About Puerto Rico, as I said to you, it was my first time, my first visit in Chicago. And this morning, I went to Humboldt Park. Humboldt Park? Yes. And I was there, and I saw an amazing flag, you know, I never see something like that. I thought it was a sculpture, but they told me, no, it is a Puerto Rican flag, you know. You know the one?
Over the street.
Yes. Yeah. It's very...
Puerto Rican territory.
So, yes, and they told me, yes, you are here in a very interesting place. So I went there. I went to a restaurant called Nelly. You know?
Yeah.
Interesting. I have the best hot meal with cocoa milk. And I have an interesting discussion with people there. Puerto Rico was invited in the CELAC summit. And yes, we follow the situation very closely. All the region, you know. All the region, and we see what happens in the near future. But it was very interesting to see that Puerto Rico was there at the CELAC summit. I'm a diplomat, you know. I'm supposed to be. So, another question.
I just wanted to speak to this because I think it would be difficult for somebody that's a Venezuelan citizen representing the Venezuelan government to make suggestions to a solidarity committee in the United States, but I think I could speak to that. And I would, Stansfield Smith, stand in the back of the Chicago committee, and I think that you should talk with some people from the Chicago committee. I'm in a very small Hammond, Indiana. I'm not from Chicago either, but I would say they're right. You're not from Venezuela, but they're not from the United States. We know more about what our government does and what our government is capable of than anybody else does. And we have a responsibility as American citizens to stand for the things that we've been raised to believe in, even if our government doesn't. So whether someone wants our act of solidarity or not is not really the issue, because we're more aware of what the U.S. is capable of. I would also suggest that what you said before about the Venezuelan students that are at the University of Toledo probably don't represent the general population of Venezuela. And I'd be happy to talk to you more about that afterwards, because we find ourselves in the same situation. Yes.
The other question. You can answer him too, but I just didn't
I
didn't want to put him on the spot.
No. I was going to say I'm not from Chicago. But you can invite me. I mean, you know, I'm with great pleasure I could come to Toledo. But then you helped me to confront. About the Philippines. You see, what took place in Latin America in the last 10 years is a clear example that something else is different from all the neoliberal policies that have been taking place in most of the world in the last 20, 30 years. And to show that, yes, something different can take place where people become the core of policies. This idea that the economic policies should serve the people and not the other way. An example where to show that it is very important to have a state to respond to the need of the people. So I think the best way to right now is to express, to respond to your question is, you know, just look at what happens in Latin America in the last 10, 15 years, and maybe that could be part of the solution. That's the reason we said Venezuela is not a threat, Venezuela is hope. In the sense that, yes, we are going through a difficult moment, that's for sure. You know, it's not easy to change a society, it's not easy to transform a society, but it's possible. And as long as you respond to the need and the demands of the people. And so that's how we'll answer to you.
Our committee in Chicago to organize this event, we don't have any Venezuelans in it either. We're against U.S. interference in Venezuela. That's what we're about. And we're against the media campaign against disinformation against Venezuela. That's sufficient.
My question would be, what are you hopeful?
What I'm sorry?
Because I'm not from the United States, but I grew up here, and I'm very unaware of what is going on. So for me, my question is, if you're not a threat, then where are you, what are you hoping for?
What's Venezuela hope for?
What we are hope for?
What do you represent as hope for the future?
That's the most difficult question I get tonight and for the last few weeks. Well, first, you know, we are trying to build a more decent society in Venezuela, a more equal society where people can get access to free education, free health, no matter their background, no matter where their who their parents are. Equal opportunities is what we are trying to do. And a more decent society, yes, where if you take a picture of Venezuela 20 years ago, 30 years ago, and now, just the street of Caracas, you see how things have changed. The people, just look at the rally of, if you take a picture of a Chavez rally, of Maduro rally, you will see that most of the people who goes there, the color of their skin. And then you take a picture of a rally of the opposition. They look more like mine. My family, they don't understand why I'm on this side. But hope for, and with the United States, we hope that we can find a better way to deal with our differences, to learn to live a kind of pacific coexistence. Maybe we can agree on certain issue. We might disagree on others, but at least to find a way to handle them and through discussion and dialogue, and not through confrontation and threat. I think that's what we hope for. And again, to leave our people to decide their future. if tomorrow the Venezuelan opposition get the majority of the votes, well, I can guarantee you that my president will be the first to accept the result and to resign. But first, we need to get that. Yeah, thank you very much for your question. So about the economic sabotage and the oil industry, you have to remember that after the attempted coup, I mean, the failed coup in 2002, a few months later, there was, a strike from the oil industry. Not only from the oil industry, I mean, it was amazing. You know, usually when you have a strike that takes place, I'm very proud to be here in Chicago because of the 1st of May and the Haymarket. And, you know, usually you think workers, they go on strike to fight for their rights and for, you know. But in Venezuela, it was the... lockout from, decided by the CEOs, by the shermans, by the los patrones. So that was strange, you know, because suddenly we decided to lock up, you know, to close the factories, to close the shops, to close the markets, to close the restaurants. And yes, PDVSA, our national company, oil company. And can you imagine, for nearly 2 months, it was a big battle. And not a single oil, was produced. And not only that, they did sabotage most of our installation. You know, some of our refineries plants, some of our, you know, yeah. And I think, can you imagine, with their computer trying to play around and to sabotage the refinery plant. This is what exactly took place in Venezuela during these months. That was in 2002, 2003. A difficult moment, but we won. And we did recover PDVSA and our industry at that moment after a long battle. But then not a single dollar get in Venezuela during all these days. It was a difficult moment. And I think more than 15,000 people from PDVSA, they left PDVSA after the sabotage. And then we didn't do too bad without them. But it was a very tricky moment. And now, when I was talking about the economic sabotage, when you look at history, you know, and the best way to promote discontent within the population, again, promote shortages and get difficult access to the dollars in the market, you know. When you read the financial press, they keep saying that Venezuela is on the edge of a default. They've been saying that for the last 10 years. And it's not the case. The other question was... Yes, so I remember President Chavez was always talking about two different concepts of America, or the Monroe Doctrine and Bolivar Doctrine. But I think Secretary Kerry said a few months ago that the Monroe Doctrine was over. So, no, I mean, if Secretary Kerry said so, you know. No, I have a lot of respect for him. And no, really, I mean, so, yeah. We'll see. I mean, again, this summit in Panama, again, was historical. We are talking about, for the first time, we were all the region were together. So we could say that was the first real summit of the Americas. The first one. And thanks to all of us, including the United States, to have accepted the president of Cuba. Yeah.
Military spending.
Yes. I don't have the with me the figure. How much you would like to know? How much we spend?
No, it's kind of like a percentage thing. I mean,
yeah, I'm looking at my
60% of the budget goes into social spending of some sort.
Okay.
It's getting serious. Now we're talking about economy.
I'm from Brazil, and you said that you work there.
Yes, I love Brazil.
Okay, that's good.
Where do you come from, Brazil?
São Paulo,
Paulista.
Yeah, exactly. So, I don't know if you know, you probably know that, but like the recent election from last year, they were even like, they were 10% different with the president.
No. We have excellent relations, yes.
Yeah, they have very good relations.
Yeah.
And our president kind of goes through, because she's not socialist, but she goes more with like the idea that to invest more in like...
She's a progressive.
Yeah, exactly. So do you think the United States is more worried about Venezuela because they're stronger about it? And like they didn't even care. Like nobody cares about what's happening in Brazil that much. But Venezuela, they put such a strong like... in it. Even though we haven't
seen our countries. Okay, I'm going to start with...
Like a socialist trap.
Yes, no, it's interesting what you're saying, but... I mean, you mentioned the attention of the media, but remember that a few months after the election, I can't remember when it was, I think three months ago, you have some demonstration that took place in all Brazil, and... particularly in São Paulo and everywhere. And all the media, they were showing pictures and people like, we want a coup. I it was very strange, you know. And there was one, I love Bahia. But Salvador de Bahia, 70% of the population is Afro. And there was a picture of the demonstration of that day in Salvador de Bahia, and you thought it was Sweden. yes. But the point is, obviously, you know, Brazil is like a continent. It's huge, and it's very important for all Latin America. Just because of the size and what Brazil represents, you know, you're part of the BRICS. Part of this new 21st, this new world that we are trying to build, the 21st century, you know, Brazil is a very important player. So obviously, things are different, but when I read the news, some of my friends in Brazil, they said to me, wow, it seems that the Brazilian opposition has been learning a lot from the Venezuelan opposition, you know?
Yeah, that's right.
So, yeah. But it's an interesting process as well. I mean, what took place in Brazil in the last 10 years is very interesting as well. About the economy, what I was saying that, and I think your question is, yes, the difference between the IMF and the Chinese, that there's no precondition. You know, you don't have a kind of... there's not a Beijing consensus to follow. That's the difference with the IMF. The IMF, they love to give,
Demands.
No, yes, they have these demands, and then they tell, oh, you're a good student, you're a bad student, you know, and rates. And then you got Christine Lagarde who said, oh, I'm very worried, blah, 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 blah. You never hear that from... somebody from China or whatever, you know? I mean, so I think that's a big difference, that we have excellent relation with China. We a strong partnership. It's not that we are trying to change from one, as you're saying. I mean, I don't think so. I think it's quite different. And about the economy, again, it's what we are trying to do. As you said yourself, yes, El Petrol, you know, the oil, create this this dependency, and we lost people in our farmers, you know, because it was far more attractive to go to the cities and to the towns and to get an easy job maybe, than really to work. And that took place in the 20th century in Venezuela, no? El Exodo Rural. And again, one of our problems in Venezuela, we didn't have a proper, how do you say, una bourgeois entrepreneur, you know, bourgeoisia. Producer, yeah. They just import. They've just been importing, and thanks to the state, actually. It's not like in Brazil, for example, or Argentina, that you have a kind of bourgeoisie that started to develop their own means of productions. And that was not the case of Venezuela. And that's been one of the problems. And what we've been trying to do in the last 15 years with Chavez and now with President Maduro, of course, is to diversify our economy and trying not to depend only of our oil industry and the price of the barrel. But it's quite difficult. And when you look at all countries or producers, it's not easy at all. But what we are trying to do, and one of the reasons why we are promoting integration, because we do believe that, yes, complementing each other with Brazil, for example, with Argentina, with Ecuador, we will be able to respond and ways to diversify our economy. What I mean that Venezuela could produce many, many things to the north of Brazil, for example. And so is that what we are trying to do? But it's a difficult task.
When I hear the questions, it strikes me that this crowd is as knowledgeable as the United States Congress. Your questions are well informed. It's 8:30. Would you stay for talk? If we want to have other questions, Jesus Rodriguez is here. Carlos Ron is here from the consulate. The ambassador will stay, so you can have other questions. I just felt like I wanted to respond to her question for hope. I keep looking at the clock, and it strikes me since we started to this minute, 30,000 kids have starved to death in the world. That doesn't have to be. The richest 435 people in the United States have as much wealth as the 90% of the rest of us. They don't have homeless people in Cuba. They don't have people without medicine in Cuba. They don't pay for college in Chile or Denmark or Sweden. That's hope for a better future. Venezuela may have problems, but Venezuela has taken what Cuba started to another step. We, as American people, could take it to a step that would change human history and our relationship to the environment. That's a hope, and that's inspirational. And we can't answer all the questions here, and I wouldn't ask a diplomat from any country to tell us everything. I would say you could go to VenezuelaAnalysis.com as a start. Get some material off of the back. I see that Professor Felix Massoud is here. A round of applause thanking him for doing this. And that was a tap of applause. Let's have a larger applause for a man that should be the ambassador of the United States. Thank you all for coming.